Okay, thanks. Hi, everybody. My name is Ann. I'm the media archivist for PBS Wisconsin, and I'm going to talk to you today about how metadata, what the workflow is for metadata, specifically for field footage. So when a videographer goes out and shoots something, they come back to the station and they ingest it into what's called HAL Ingest, which is our server. And let's see here. So the first step they do is they need to create a folder on the network. And so they go navigate to their project, and then they create a folder under that project. And so the folder is a descriptive title that describes the footage, basically. And it is these keywords that they use to describe the footage plus the date are searchable in video search. So these are important words to use here. And then once they are done adding their folder, they can add metadata to the files that they are going to ingest. So this is right on the desktop of HAL. So they click on the metadata, then they navigate to their folder they just created, and they click on it and hit submit. And then at this point, they can add any other descriptive metadata that will help describe what they just shot. So the keywords are separated by commas, and yeah, I guess that's basically it. So, they can add as many terms as they want to describe the footage. Then they enter their email and hit submit, and then I get the email with the metadata. So then I will go into video search and add to the files the metadata that they just created. So this is an example of one email I received. So you'll see that the folder that they created was promotions, and the words they used to describe it was drone, Vilas, Olin, McDaniel, Aldo Leopold, plus the date, which is really good metadata that's also, like I said, searchable in video search. And then the keywords are, you can see there. So then I will go in and add this to video search, and I do this by, so I've already brought up the footage here, right here, and I'll play back the footage. It's about 46 minutes long. I don't do this in real time, obviously. And I'll cut and paste the keywords that they gave me as a starting point. So I'm gonna take out some of these commas between concepts. So it's Olin Park, bicycle path. Oops. Water, Lake Monona, McDaniel Park, I assume, because I looked this up earlier, paddleboard, and kayak. So then I'll just scrub through here quick, see if there's any other things I want to add. I mean, we can crowdsource this, so if there's anything that you think that I should add that I don't add, just let me know. I'd probably add shoreline here. Bike path.
Do you ever add like seasonal words?
Yeah.
Summer.
Yep.
Summer footage.
And so this is some stuff that wasn't in the metadata, so I'm going to go ahead and add this. This is really good stuff of downtown. Just add from Lake Monona. Lake Monona is already in there, but I think it helps to add context if you add a whole concept that you're looking at here.
For keywords, is it strictly like locations, and do we also add like moods or colors or like? Kind of.
That anything is helpful, really, because any people, however you think people would search, this is how I approach this, is I ask myself, how would people want to find this stuff? So, yeah, that all that stuff is great, especially if you have an interview and you help with, so I don't have to watch the whole interview, like if they're talking about the budget or something, so you could have a joint finance committee budget discussion or what, something like that, so I don't have to go in and take the time to get those concepts on my own. It just saves me some time. So I want to add Monona Terrace to this. And capital.
And is there a way you can blow up the text to make it a little easier to see?
Not really. Okay. Can you see that better?
It's about the same.
And so I looked at this footage before. I don't know what this is. If anybody knows what this is, it's like a bicyclist riding on some sort of track.
It's a pump track.
It's a what?
Pump track.
P-U-N-K?
Yes.
What is it? What's the second word?
Track.
Track. Oh, okay. Awesome. Thank you.
And when we're bringing footage back that can only be used for a certain show, is that put in here? Is like the restriction information
yes,
put in here?
Yes, I can add restrictions okay. at this point too. I would just add at the front of the keywords rights restricted, and then when somebody searches it in video search, it'll come up with a red rights restricted to notify them that they shouldn't use it, or they should ask for permission first. Oh yeah.
Sorry, it's not punk. It's pump. P-U-M-P.
Punt.
Pump.
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 Pump the water.
Okay, thank you. I need closed captioning. Okay, and so this is the McFarland Boardwalk, I want to say. It's also part of, which I looked up earlier, the Lower Yahara River Trail. Thanks for doing this with me. And I think that's pretty much.
Hey, Ann, so.
Oh, yeah.
Is this your normal process that you would spend the time supplementing these metadata words, or are you just showing us how you do it today?
No, this is what I do. This is how I do it. And then I'll put later on there's a train tracks.
So clearly the more time producers or videographers are spending putting metadata in, the less time consuming it is for you?
Yeah, plus they know it. Like, they're familiar with what they shot, and so it really helps a lot to have place names, especially. So anyway, so then I'll just hit submit for the folder level, and it adds the metadata to these files here. It takes a couple minutes to do that. So here are some other examples of metadata that I've received. This one is from the Lighthouses shoot, and one of the shoots, and this is really awesome because it has the actual names of the birds, which is nice. So I didn't really have to add a lot to that. And then here's another one from that, and sometimes people just send me emails without going through the adding metadata on the desktop, so that's fine too. And there's three things to remember for videographers when they come back, and that's: one, to submit metadata for everything ingested; two, submit metadata for everything ingested; and three, submit metadata for everything is ingested. Don't wait to ingest your stuff. Do it right away, because it's the most secure way to keep your footage. So that's another thing. I was kind of curious if there are things that you search and you don't find, or other things that you'd like to see in the metadata. So,
Ann?
Yeah.
I'll ask a question, and Josh asks a question, and I think we'll move on after that. Can you just briefly explain why metadata is important? What do we do with it? And what is it useful for in the future?
That's such a big question. Well, it helps us find content. So it's basically without metadata, the content is lost. I figure it's like putting a book on a shelf randomly in the library at the UW, and you would never be able to find it again. Also, like if I don't track videographers, I don't see like when they go out and shoot, I don't keep that on my things to do list. So I don't know if they come back and don't submit metadata for something. So it really helps to, for me, to know what's being produced so I can continue to add metadata and other people in the station can reuse this content if instead of going out spending money and time to shoot it again.
Anne, I had a question.
Yeah.
Is there ever a problem with including too much metadata just because those, as a videographer, when I'm entering information, when I look at those clips there, it's providing all that information to a folder of clips, even though, so like, let's say we do Lake Monona, but only 25% of the footage is Lake Monona, and then you wind up with the other 75% of the clips. Yeah, what are your recommendations about that?
What we've done in the past is I just add it to all the metadata, because if I went through clip by clip, it would just take too long. So a lot of the footage, like if you just click on this footage, for instance, this file is just, you'll see the metadata is, still says Lake Monona, capital, stuff like that. So instead of going through file by file, I just add it to the whole package.
Hey, Anne, so you're showing us clips, but you can also search full programs in video storage?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So my question then is related to the rights restricted language. Mm-hmm. So if I'm watching a full hour-long clip of, say, Shipwrecks, a whole program, and I see something that says rights restricted in the info, how do I know which particular shots or pieces of media in that hour-long program are the ones that are rights restricted?
Yeah, that's something I'm going to get to after John talks, and then I'll go through that. We're calling it an alt element cue sheet, which is something similar to what Andy created for Wisconsin Pride, so I'll touch on that after that. Cool. No more questions. I'll leave it to John. Oh, okay. Yeah.
I will try to be brief, leave time for questions, and not bore you if possible. All right. Hi, I'm John Dedrick. For those of you who haven't met me, digital media specialist, work in the engineering department. I'm going to go through hopefully a very brief summary of a few things here today. How we handle a lot of our file processing and a lot of our file storage and how to find that stuff. Metadata is important to finding stuff, but also knowing, what websites to use to, internal websites to use to do that. I'm going to start here on the Digital Dub page because this is the root of the Digital Dub website. And if you when you come here, you can see that there are a few different places to search. And if you've ever heard of the PMR, that's what we refer to as the Production Master Repository, and that's where we store our complete edited programs for future use. And part of how you get content into the Production Master Repository is when an editor completes an edit, they export a file using the media ID, and the media ID is also sometimes referred to as a house ID, but they're similar but not exactly the same thing. However, when you use the media ID, that's how we track stuff, and that's how content gets over to the operation center for AIR. It's using that unique ID. And so you would, once you have that unique ID and are ready to export, you would export to this location, what we call the Xcode Dropbox, and that is a list of has a list of folders, and you would export to the folder that's appropriate for whatever program you're exporting. And then the file would be taken out of this location and would be put into our PMR storage. And within DigitalDub here, when you click on PMR, you can do a search, but you can only do a search for the actual media ID. So if I were to type in shipwrecks right here, it would not come up with anything because it's just looking for the media ID. So I'm going to jump back over here to video search, and I'm going to refresh here. If you've ever seen this little box come up, it's not anyone trying to hack you. It's just our way of making sure that we have an idea of who's using video search and how, and if they're having issues, we can then identify who's having issues and try and help them out. For instance, I had someone a while ago who was trying to find some legislative session coverage that involved critical race theory, and they were searching for race theory and critical race, et cetera, and not finding anything. So I was able to reach out to that person and say, hey, this is, can I help you? And we were able to find the footage that they were looking for. So I'm going to type in my name here. And this is the root of the video search page, and this is the dark mode, in case you're wondering why Anne's look different than mine. It's just the computer setting. I'm going to give you an example of how I use video search to find something and quickly start using it. And I'm going to, this is a Slack message that I had with Heather Reese. Hi, Heather. From earlier this month, we were working with some footage that was having some sort of color or video level issue. And so she sent me the file name here and then the path to where I could find that file on HAL. Sure, I could go to HAL and I could drill down through all these folders and then scroll through the file list and try to find the file. But in this case, what I did was just copy the file name. I had video search already open, so it was really easy to just plug it in there, get the path. Here, there's a copy file path button. I can just copy that, bring it in to the import section of Premiere, paste it, and now I'm editing with it. So that's handy when you're in BIOS specifically. It doesn't obviously work that well if you're at home and trying to grab these files over the internet. There are better ways to handle it. You'd probably want to download it locally first before trying to use it. But if you're in BIOS, this is a handy way to get something in real quickly. Add on to that if you are editing a lot of footage, you would not want to grab a single file off of HAL or out of the tomb, because that is not meant to be edited by a whole bunch of people all at once. So it's really just a location to store stuff to be copied to a better editing location. All right. So one quick thing I wanted to note is that you can see these little Windows icons here. If I were on a Mac, you should see a little Apple icon come up, and the paths that get copied as a result of which operating system you're on are different. And so they should work similarly, but there is a little bit of information here based on which type of operating system you're on as to how it's going to work. You can request dubs through this little dialog box as well, specifically for the types of dubs that we expect people are going to want from raw footage, which is coming from either HAL or the tomb. And those are typically just MP4s, JPEGs, or a Trint transcript. And that's similar to DigitalDub, but DigitalDub is more focused on content from our production master and broadcast master repositories. So if I were to I'll do shipwrecks since we were using that already. And I'll limit it to the PMR here. And so you can see that there are a handful of different files for shipwrecks. Anything that ends in PL, that should be a pledge version of a program. We sometimes have more than one version of a program, a strict broadcast length version, a pledge specific version, sometimes a DVD or for the web only version. But if I were to request this dub here, it will use the media ID that was in this column here. And it will do a search on that within Digital Dub, and it will come up with these results, and I can make these selections. One thing I want to point out is that there's lots of information down below when you do a search that will explain what each and every output is, and so that will help guide you to the type of output you might want. You're always welcome to reach out with questions if you have them. One thing I wanted to highlight here is that this caption dub is not specifically to provide you automatically a caption file to use in your program, whatever that might be. This is actually to create a caption compose file for the captioning team to use to create captions. So I've actually been considering changing the name of that to something that might tip someone off to that. It's not, checking that box is not going to automatically give you a caption file right away. So I think that actually was all that I wanted to cover. I wanted to leave time for questions. So if you have any questions, please pass them along. Sure.
To get to video search or digital dub, you need to be on the VPN or on wireless network. Is that true?
That is true, yes. VPN being Global Protect, WISC VPN, and you should be able to get to them. And their URLs are ending in pbswi.wisc.edu, and then video search and digital dub are the subdomains, I guess you would call it. We do. It's
the question is, do we still make Blu-rays?
Yes, thank you. We do still make Blu-rays. We make DVDs more often, but certainly for programs like the Wisconsin From the Air series, we made Blu-rays for a number of those. The original Wisconsin From the Air was like 10 years ago, yes, but there have been a few since then.
John, mm-hmm. For a brand new producer or videographer or editor who is looking to find the location of these things, is that written down somewhere where people could go and say, hey, I want to find the URL for the video search, or just as you described, you need to be logged into Global Protect? I mean, are there directions for navigating some of these things for people who are new to our organization?
We have Confluence pages set up, and I guess that's probably more specifically geared toward editors, but it's available to everyone. I'm going to click on this. This is our Mastering Standards page, but within the PBS Wisconsin Knowledge Base, there are links to a number of different... here, we can find it there. There we go. Okay. There are links over here on the left for a number of different handy pages.
And can you remind people how to get to Confluence?
We do have to have a URL to give people, and that's this wisconsinpublicmedia.atlassian.net, and you'll have to log in with your net ID once you navigate there if you haven't been there before. Yes. It might be, I'm not actually sure. It might be on our intranet. I'm not familiar with any Slack connections to that, but yeah.
I did share the link in Zoom. I'll reach out to Tim and have him put that on the quick links for the PBS Wisconsin staff intranet.
Okay. Anything else? Yes. Well, I mean, if you you won't be restricted from technical access to the content. It's just a matter of you need to reach out to probably the original producer, if possible, if you know that person. Otherwise, you can reach out to Anne and myself to try to track down who you need to actually ask to obtain permission to use it. But as far as being technically blocked from accessing that content, you shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, thanks. It is really critical that everyone is respecting the rights restricted language, because often that's tied to our inability to get release forms, things like that, that we do not have permission to share something out, or it's of a very sensitive nature, particularly with a lot of the news coverage. There may be something that it was a very vulnerable population or something like that, that we would not want to use that image to represent something else because it's very sensitive. But often it's just a matter of reaching out to the producer of that original content and having a quick conversation, because depending on the context, possibly it might be able to be used for something else. But that's generally why we have the rights restricted language on there. Lack of release forms, things that we had to pay for that we could only get rights to use for one particular reason, or because it was a very vulnerable situation.
I believe that Anne's probably going to cover the cue sheet that she referenced earlier, and that will also provide some information about how to what content within the program is actually restricted and how to determine whether you can use it or not. Any other questions? All right. Thank you very much.
So most of the stuff that Christine mentioned, like when you get photographs for a program, like Wisconsin Pride is a good example of a recent one, and it's from somebody's personal collection, or it's video or photographs from an archive, a lot of that time, you're only going to get permission for that one use. So a lot of our programs could be considered restricted in that way. So I wanted to propose this. I think it's a temporary solution, because there is a new archivist being hired for the production department. There's a new digital asset management system that's coming in to the design department. So that might affect how this is going to work in the future. But just temporarily, so we make sure that we don't reuse something and get in trouble for it. I wanted to propose this idea of an alt element cue sheet, and thanks to Holly for helping me out with this. She's worked with this in the past. So basically, it's an Excel document or a Google sheet you can use that for the final program that lists the time code, the media type, the file name, which is locally created, the description of the content, the source, where did you find the element, was it an archive, private citizen, etc. The source ID, the source ID link, what rights you cleared for it, the rights URL, and any contact information for those rights. So I put some examples in here just to give you an idea of what I'm thinking. And if you have any questions along the way, let me just ask, because I'm just throwing this out there, seeing what you think of it. And what we'll do is keep this documentation in the folder under a project resources folder in your project. So the first example, the time code is 4 minutes. It's a photo. It's this particular item ID from the Historical Society. So the idea is that you could go back with this information and find the original source. And the description, Two Women Serving Coffee, it's from the Historical Society. We got the release to use it from the Wisconsin Historical Society. And I'll just show the image here. So can you see that okay? And so these are just more examples from different institutions. One is from the Library of Congress, which they have their specific item ID, the description, and then this last one is from the UW Archives. So that's really all I wanted to say about that. I don't know if what you think of it, and if you want, I mean, okay, all right. And so then when we have something as restricted on video search, we'll be able to go into this document and say, you know, what are the rights for it? Maybe you do have rights in perpetuity, but doubtful. Anyway, any questions? Christine?
Always with the questions. Now, this is just a comment that I am thrilled that you are doing this, and thank you, Holly, for your help with this as well. You know, we have had, we're lucky in that a lot of our producers have been with us for a long time, and our producers mm-hmm. have done an excellent job of individually keeping track of these things and have their own files and records, but there's never really been a centralized place for folks to look, and especially now we have this great video search, it's really important more than ever that we're keeping track of those rights and releases, and that as we're sharing video, people can use what they want and need, but also understand where we can get ourselves in trouble if we're not aware that some of these things are rights restricted. And even then to understand with some of these things that may be rights restricted, to know where the source was, that allows other people to go back to that original source and see if they can clear it for additional use. So I think this is a fantastic bridge to wherever we may go with cataloging that information down the road. So thank you for doing this.
Thank you. It doesn't have to just be archival content. It can be current content, like this footage we got from a private individual of a grouse. So yeah, that's why it's called Alt Element. Because it could be archival and current content. So, and when I have the information about who has the rights to it, I add it to the keywords.
And how would people access that form that you just showed us? Where would a producer look for that?
Right now it's on the engineering Google Drive, is that Google Drive? Yeah, so I could put it somewhere, wherever. I'll let you know where I put it. So yeah, no, please, no. So if you have any questions, just let me know. I'm curious, and I'll keep in touch with how this process changes as, you know, the dynamic of who we hire and stuff changes too.